Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Socialism. There's been a lot of talk about that issue recently. Dictionary.com defines it as a theory or system of social organization that advocates the ownership and control of the means of production and distribution, capital, land, etc., by the community as a whole, usually through a centralized government. That's their definition. Is this idea a recent phenomenon, or has the concept been around for a while? My guest today is Bill Federer. So he's a Christian historian, author, nationally known speaker, and president of AmeriSearch, Inc. We're going to be talking about one of his recent books. I'm not going to give you the title of the book yet, as that would answer the question I just posed. Thanks, Bill, for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
Many, if not all, of those who talk about socialism say it will create a utopia. Just what does the word utopia mean? I was shocked when I read it in your book.
Right. Well, utopia means nowhere. Yeah. It's Sir Thomas More made up in 1516 when he wrote his book, Utopia. And it's a perfect structured society based on Plato. Plato lived around 380 BC. And he's the first one that came up with the idea of everybody owning everything in common. And it sounds good until you think it through. Somebody has to be in the government handing out the common stuff. Mm-hmm. And they are always going to be tempted to want to funnel a little extra to their family and friends on the side and hold back from someone they don't like. And before you know it, it gets discretionary. Mm-hmm. And the saying is, he who holds the purse strings has the power. So every attempt at everybody owning everything equally always ends up with a deep state bureaucracy passing out favors to their friends with the most corrupt guy at the top, a dictator. So this structured society, philosophers through history have said, oh, if only we could set it up, it ignores human nature.
Yeah.
But Sir Thomas More, 1516, wrote Island of Utopia, and it's a perfectly structured society of a ruling class and a ruled class. The ruling class is above the law, they're politically connected, they get all the favors, and the ruled class are the commoners. Somebody wrote a satire on this, and we've all read it, Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels.
And I had not made that connection until I read that in your book. Yeah.
Yeah, that he's washed up on this island and it's perfectly structured. And you have the ruling class on top and the commoners below. And the ruling class holds everything in common, decides who gets what, decides everyone's careers, and even takes the choice of parents and brings them into the city. And Plato says, indoctrinates the children with noble lies, teaches them lies, but the lies help the ruling class to stay in power, and that keeps it from getting into an unorganized chaos, and so they think it's okay for them to teach the children lies.
And that sounds so familiar as to what is going on in this country right now through the public education system. If we had known the history, because some of those, your book is full of quotes, and I love that. You know, it's all under one cover now, and I would definitely use it as a great resource. But if we had learned our history, our nation's history, and the warnings that were given even back in the late 1700s, we would not be where we are today as a nation. It's just, it's mind-boggling, but it's part of the lies that public school students are being told about this nation's history as they're erasing the history, basically, and rewriting it. It was very troubling to know we've been warned and we've ignored the warnings.
People say, well, wasn't the early church socialist? And the answer is no. The early church was the early church. Mm-hmm. Socialism is counterfeit early church. And the difference is between the word voluntary and involuntary. Mm-hmm. The early believers voluntarily sold their property and laid it at the feet of the apostles. They didn't have the government involuntarily take away their property and laid it at the feet of Pilate. When the children of Israel went into the promised land, every family was given property. If you own property, you can accumulate stuff.
Yeah.
The Bible called that being blessed. And you can give away some of your stuff. The Bible called that charity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't own anything, how can you be charitable? Lenin said socialism is a transition phase to communism. And Marx said communism can be summed up in one sentence: abolition of private property. Mm-hmm. If you don't own anything, how can you be charitable? How can you give away what you don't have?
Yeah.
Are you going to break the law and steal? No. God entrusts you with stuff and then gives you opportunities to show the love of God on the outside that you have on the inside. Mm-hmm. And people say, wasn't Jesus socialist? Well, let's read the parable of the talents. The guy with five multiplies it to 10. The guy with two multiplies it to four. The one guy buried it. And he says, take it from that wicked servant and give it to the guy that has 10. And the servant say, well, sir, he already has 10. And he says, to the guy that's not going to do anything with it, what he has is going to be taken away. And the guy that's going to do something with it, well, you know, he'll be entrusted with it.
Right, right.
There's even the proverb of the master says, you know, go out and work in the field and I'll pay you. And then at the end of the day, some other people come along and I'll pay you the same amount. And then they grumble because the other one said, we worked through the heat of the day and they got paid the same. And he says, cannot I do what I want with my money?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
private property.
Yep.
And when Ananias and Sapphira before Peter, and Peter says, was not it yours? And you could sell it and give it away as you wish. But their sin was they lied to the Holy Spirit. But he was acknowledging that the property was theirs. So throughout the Bible, God has private property.
Right.
And the idea of taking it away and redistributing it, all it does is empower the ruling class.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point. Now, I was surprised as I read through your book just how many attempts here in the U.S. there have been to create a utopia, even in the 1800s. I mean, almost from the beginning of the establishment of the United States of America, there have been attempts by people to create utopias here on Earth. And we know it's not going to happen. But it's
right.
There's been attempts.
Yeah, and they all fail because they deny human nature. The first is the Pilgrims. So the Pilgrims had no money, and so they approached some investors in England who formed the London Company, and they lent them the money. But they had bylaws for the company that said everything would be owned in common. Everything got by hunting, fishing, cooking, trading shall go into ye common stock. And everyone's livelihood shall be out of ye common stock. And they tried it and almost starved to death. William Bradford said the failure of this experiment of communal service, which was tried by good and honest men, proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, the Pilgrims knew that they were the first people on the planet that were actually trying to live out this theoretical, oh, let's everybody own everything in common. He says that the young man objected to doing twice as much work as the old guy, but got paid the same. Mm. The old guy objected to being classed in labor with the younger men and considered it a dishonor. And the women, he said, they objected to having to wash other men's clothes. And nobody wanted to plant. And Bradford said, after much discussion, it was decided every family would get their own plot of land. This made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the field to plant corn, while before they would allege weakness, and to have compelled them would have been great oppression. So even the Pilgrims tried it, and it failed.
Yeah.
You see, and it's funny.
Yeah, and then there were other ones in the 1800s, and that, you know, that failed. There were numerous ones, attempts after that to create a utopia, and they all failed. Because when you establish something, humans get involved, and humans are not perfect at all.
Yeah, one was New Harmony, Indiana, and these were socialists, and they said, let's just set it up, and everybody own everything in common, and we'll make it where you only have to work the job that you want to work. And, and you know, it all sounded good on paper, but it attracted bums, and all they did was do nothing. Yeah. And then the ones that were working were like, why do I have to work when these guys are just sitting around? And the whole thing fell apart. You cannot change human nature. Is ingrained. What our founders said was, no, you get stuff, but then you are preached to and you believe the Bible and you're supposed to care about your neighbor. And so it's a voluntary thing versus a government redistribution to their friends and supporters.
And that was one thing the founding fathers understood human nature much more clearly than too many of today's leaders, quote unquote leaders, do. The founding fathers understood. They understood human nature. If mankind was allowed to go its own way, it would lead to destruction. And the founding fathers understood that.
Right. And one of the big examples is the French Revolution. Mm. The motto of the French Revolution was liberty, equality, fraternity. It sounds really nice. It does not work. Liberty is experienced individually. Fraternity is their word for socialism. The fraternity, the collective, the group, the mob, the state, and equality can be understood two ways. In America, it was equal treatment before the law. In France, it was everyone having an equal amount of stuff, equity. And if the fraternité, the group, the collective, thinks you have too much stuff, well, guess what? The benefit of the collective outweighs the benefit of the individual. And they can use the power of the state to crush your individual liberty, confiscate all your stuff, redistribute it to their friends and supporters, and kill you. Mm. And so they chopped off 30,000 heads during the Reign of Terror in the French Revolution. And so that became the blueprint for every socialist revolution since. And the irony is that each new one thinks we're going to do it right this time. It's like there is no right this time. You're just taking. And so there's two ways to institute socialism. One is fear. You get people into fear and they will trade all their freedoms for security. Mm-hmm. And the second is free stuff, right? The government's so nice, it's giving you free stuff until you get dependent. And then you want to continue the free stuff. Well, you're going to incrementally give up your freedom.
Yep.
And so it's like a drug dealer takes over a neighborhood two ways. He can come in with guns, get everybody in fear, they submit, or the drug dealer is so nice, he's giving away free drugs until you get hooked.
Yeah.
Then you want some more free drugs, you're going to have to give up your freedom and sell yourself into prostitution. So it's a front door, back door approach. I tell people, what if older fish could tell younger fish to stay away from shiny things dangling in the water? But they can't.
Exactly.
So every new generation sees that shiny thing, they're attracted, they're caught. Socialism is the shiny thing dangling in the water. Free food, free clothes, free education, free welfare, free, free, free. Free is attractive, but there is a hook. You give up control of your life.
Benjamin Franklin warned us about giving up our liberties for a little bit of security. What we see happening right now in this country, it's very, very troubling that we see it happening, and we've been warned and warned and warned against it.
Yeah, human nature doesn't change.
No, it doesn't. Now, where does the word socialism come from? I know Plato and the Pilgrims didn't use the word socialism. So where did that word actually come from?
Yeah, it was in the early 1800s, and it was some of these philosophers, you know, Karl Marx, Hegel, and they did a four-stage transition. And the first, you have pilgrims, and they had a covenant with God. This God gives you blessings. You voluntarily share those blessings with your neighbor because you're doing it as unto God. Century after the pilgrims, covenant turned into social contract during the Age of Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution. And they had Isaac Newton discovering laws of gravity and Kepler, laws of planetary motion, Robert Boyle, laws of pressure, and all these laws are being discovered. And so some theologians said, well, maybe God made everything with laws, and he's out there, but he's distant, he's not involved, and so he's a distant God. And so you go from a covenant with the pilgrims, with a personal God who's involved with your life, to the Age of Enlightenment, a distant God, and it's more of a social contract. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the French Revolution. And it's a social contract with no God, not a distant one, not at all. There's no God. It's just you get your rights from the group and you're accountable to the group. And then the next century after that is socialism, where it makes the state God.
And we see the state
decides if you live or die.
Yeah. We see what happened in the French Revolution with them comparing that to the American Revolution, where, you know, we recognize that we had God-given rights. I mean, they kept God in the center of the war for independence and the efforts, where the French Revolution, as you said, threw God out. Well, you said 30,000 were beheaded during the Reign of Terror, something like that?
Yeah, and then there was a rural area called the Vendée, and they're hundreds of miles away from Paris. They think they're safe. Well, guess what? They send their army to this rural area, and they kill 300,000 men, women, and
goodness.
Children. Everybody that does not want to go along with this new social order. So that's the blueprint for every socialist revolution since. You kill off the old people that refuse to change so you can do something new. So you had Pol Pot killing millions in Cambodia, and Mao Zedong killing millions in China, and Stalin killing millions in Russia. And that's sort of the blueprint. You want to do something new, we're going to do it right this time, and we're going to kill off everybody that doesn't want to go along. But the new ends up being a dictatorship,
mm-hmm.
a ruling class with the most corrupt guy at the top.
Yeah.
Since human nature has not changed.
Because it stays the same. Here in page 108 of your book, which is entitled Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, it says Stalin rewrote history, tearing down statues and renaming streets, museums, and ships, even changing the name of St. Petersburg to Leningrad. We see the same thing happening in this country as far as they had this naming committee or something that was just established by the Biden administration where we're renaming anything to do with the Confederacy. They're renaming it. Their statues have been torn down. Statues have been removed. Forts have been renamed. It's no longer Fort Bragg. I think it's Fort Liberty. You know, how many people even knew that Fort Bragg had a history that the name Bragg had anything to do with the Confederate general? But, yeah, we see the same thing happening in this country, and we see more and more calls for socialism, that's the answer to all of our problems, et cetera, as history has shown us, it doesn't work. And as history has shown us, a lot of people end up dead in the process of trying to switch over to socialism. It's interesting that, you know, what they did there in France, in that countryside in France, where there was an established community who were sticking with the old ways because they didn't want to buy into the socialism, basically, that was coming out of Paris, but yet they were destroyed, even though you said, they were 100 miles from Paris, which was a long way back then, but it didn't matter. They were there, and they were considered a blight upon the countryside because it didn't buy into what was being pushed by the folks in control at that point. Very frightening.
You know, you bring up an interesting point where during the French Revolution, they decided to get rid of statues like good King Henry IV, and they dug up the bones of St. Genevieve, who lived, you know, over 1,000 years earlier. Then they decided they didn't want to go back to done in the year of the Lord. And so they changed the 1792 to the new year one.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't want a 7-day week because it went back to the Bible. So they came up with a 10-day week, a decade week. And each day had 10 hours. Each hour had 100 minutes. Each minute had 100 seconds. They said 10 was the number of man because you count with 10 fingers. Mm. And so they made every measurement in France divisible by 10. They called it the metric system. Maybe that's why I never really liked the metric system.
Me either. I didn't know the history, but I didn't like it. Anyway, go ahead.
So it was an intentional effort to take God out of the country. And the process is called deconstruction. And it's a drive neutral reverse process. It's, in other words, you go into the classroom, you tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers. They took land from Indians, sold people into slavery. They were chauvinists, and these kids are repulsed by them. Now you have the kids in a neutral. They're open-minded. Then you give them your pitch for LGBTQ or socialism or Sharia or critical race theory or something. It's a sales technique. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is tell you negative things about the toothpaste you're currently brushing with. You're still using that stuff? Haven't you read it? It'll eat the enamel off your teeth. You're like, ooh, you're repulsed by it. Now I have you in a neutral. You're open-minded. What are all the toothpastes out there? And then I give you my pitch for this brand new tartar control breath freshener toothpaste. It's a drive neutral reverse. And that's what happened in Europe. Went from a Judeo-Christian Europe with 1,000 years of Catholic cathedrals, Protestant Reformation, and Jewish neighborhoods to a secular Europe with the French Revolution, free sex, anything goes. And now it's turning into an Islamic and Sharia socialist Europe. But the Muslims did this. Whenever they would come into a country, they would destroy history, destroy artwork and museums and libraries and churches. When the communists would come in, they would destroy history and, you know, change St. Petersburg to Leningrad. Mm-hmm. When the Chinese, there's an interesting story, 3rd century BC, the Warring States period, and you had a half a dozen kingdoms fighting, and one wins, led by Qin Shi Huangdi, considered the unifier of China, and he is criticized for doing things differently than they had been done before. So he decided to destroy all records of how things were done before. And so he burned tens of thousands of bamboo handle books.
Oh, wow. So they couldn't compare. They couldn't compare what he was doing.
Yeah, and so Mao Zedong in the 1960s did the exact same thing called the Cultural Revolution. He destroyed thousands of years of Chinese culture. the Great Gates of Beijing, the oldest Buddhist temple in China. Why? Because he wanted to do something new, the People's Republic of China. Pol Pot in Cambodia made 1975 the New Year Zero. Said anything prior to that was irrelevant. And he killed a third of his country. He killed anybody that wore glasses. He said if you wore glasses, you could read. If you read, you knew the history, and you want to get rid of this history because he wanted to do something new. Yeah. So you always see that whenever socialism comes in, they get rid of history. The book that everybody may have read in school, but it's 1984, mm-hmm. this dystopian novel by George Orwell. It had a character named Winston, and he worked for the government in the Ministry of Truth, which all it did was lie. It's like a ministry of, you know, misinformation.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he was sitting at his desk and down this pneumatic tube, because like you had a bank where you stick your deposit mm-hmm. and it sucks it up. That was a new invention in 1948.
Okay.
So down this pneumatic tube comes the history to edit. He takes his little pen knife, he cuts it out. He takes the old correct history, sticks it in another pneumatic tube that's sucked down into the incinerator in the basement called down the memory hole. And he said, every memory has been erased. Every date has been changed. Every statue has been renamed. Every street has been renamed. History doesn't exist. Even if I know that I changed the history, I've destroyed the evidence. So yeah. No evidence remains. The only evidence is inside my own mind. I don't know if anyone shares my memories. The lie became truth. He says this way, the party controls the truth. And if there's no, you know, if there's no God, there's no absolute right and wrong. If you can spin a story to push your agenda, why can't you spin history to push your agenda?
Yeah. You know, again, your book is full of so many warnings, so many really fascinating quotes. I want to just read off a couple. One is from Calvin Coolidge in 1926, quote, unless bureaucracy is constantly resisted, it breaks down representative government and overwhelms democracy. It sets up the pretense of having authority over everybody and being responsible to nobody. I mean, that is describing today, right now, where really a bureaucratic state. Here's one from President Truman in 1950. If we don't have a proper fundamental moral background, we will finally end up with a totalitarian government which does not believe in rights for anybody except the state. Like I said, the book is full of so much history and so much information that we have forgotten or that we have never learned in too many cases, because the state controls, by and large, controls the education system. When it comes to public education, definitely controls it. And we're thankful there's an uptick in homeschooling and such as that. That is fantastic. So, you know, looking at the country as it is right now, does the church have a role in getting things back in order?
Yes, definitely. I studied American history. In the 1600s, you had Calvinist Puritans and these Baptists and Congregationalists, and they had a form of government. It was called a covenant form of government, and it's a way for people to rule ourselves without a king.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to be involved. But in the 1700s, you had Pietists, and they were good in the sense that they said it's more than a covenant plan. You have to have an experience with Jesus. But when you have this experience, you're going to withdraw from worldly things like bars and brothels and government. And so that's the origin of, our church, we just preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. We don't get involved in politics. It's like, where did that idea come from? Didn't come from the founders of America, because everybody was involved.
Yeah.
You look at Hartford and Providence, Rhode Island, it was the church that founded the city.
Wow.
There were no non-church members to be lazy and let them run the city. And they had a covenant form of church government where everybody is involved, that they simply made their civil government, everybody's involved. And get this. They met in the same building. It was called a meeting house.
Mm.
That's where the pastor would teach the Bible, and that's where they would gather together and do their city business. The word synagogue means meeting house. That's where the rabbi would teach the law, and that's where they would do their city business. I mean, why build a separate building to talk about a different topic? So when the revolution starts, the British sent over a military governor, Thomas Gage, and he outlaws meeting houses. We don't need the people meeting and giving your consent. You just obey government mandates. Mm. You're a zombie. You're a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You have the founders of America, form of church government, everybody's involved, that they made into their civil government, everybody's involved. And then in the 1700s, she said, don't get involved in worldly things, which is good, but they threw government in that pot. And so don't get involved in government because it's worldly. And so now you pull back. Well, guess what? If the Christians are not involved, who takes over? The ungodly.
Yeah.
And I tell people, if it is a personal experience with Jesus, don't you want your kids to have a chance at having a personal experience with Jesus. Because if you don't get involved, what they're teaching your kids today is there is no God. And if he's there, he's messed up. He's so confused, powerless. He's putting men in women's bodies, and you have to have operations to fix it. And then they tell the kids, oh, go out and try any type of sex you want. Well, guess what? If sex outside of marriage is not sin, there is no sin.
Yeah.
And if there's no sins, you don't need a savior. And so they're telling these Christians, if you're really a Christian, you'll sit back while we teach your kids an anti-Christian gospel.
You hit the nail right on the head. And we see that happening.
Jesus said, if you allow one of these little ones that believes in me to stumble, better than a millstone we put around your neck. Yeah. So all these people that think they're being spiritual, we just preach the gospel, we don't get involved yet. But you're silent and you're letting them take over and teach an anti-Christian gospel. Well, I'm just going to wait until the rapture. It's like, who do you think you're going to meet when you're raptured? Jesus? Yeah. You think he cares about the little children, that these little innocent kids are being mutilated?
Yeah.
And you're in charge in America? The citizens are the king? Right? It's not like, you know, China or North Korea where you can't get involved. No, in America, the people are in charge. And it's anyway.
And they've forgotten. I mean, the citizens, the ones who do go to the polls too many times to vote, you know, the ones who do go to the polls to vote too many times are uneducated as to the positions of the candidates. And unfortunately, they just vote for the letter after the candidate's name, whether it's a D or an R or whatever. They need to become educated voters. Yeah, and the church is going to take a role in encouraging Christians in sitting in the pews to become involved, because we see what's happened to this nation because of the lack of involvement in the church. The book is Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, and I do encourage everyone to get this. It was fascinating, fascinating book. How can folks get the book, and how can folks contact you?
Oh, thank you. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com, and they can sign up for my free history email, and I go through a lot of this stuff, but the title of the book is Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. And again, AmericanMinute.com.
Fantastic. Wow. And again, I encourage our listeners to get this book because they need it. They definitely need it. Anyway, thanks so much, Bill, for being with us. I always appreciate your input.
Oh, God bless you. Anytime.
Okay. God bless. Take care. Goodbye.
Bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.